Welcome to Cabronas y Chingones, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Casey from Atypical, the new, not so new Netflix series. And like in the first episode, you see her like defend this like bigger girl who is obviously like bullied, and she defends her against Ariella Barrera's character. She's also in it. Yeah. And she like punches the shit out of her for bullying this girl. And she's like a super tomboy, and she doesn't care about dating and all this other stuff. And I was like, oh, she has the short hair. She has the the haircut. I'm pretty sure you can picture it in your head. She has all the perfect elements, and like they just made her like get with the super basic white guy. But I was like, she should be gay. Boom. Cabrona.
What's poppin', chingona? And if you guys didn't know, we're gonna do this again. I'm Fried Papita.
I'm Maite. I think people get our voices mixed up sometimes. We talked about this before. We're different people.
Oddly enough, we are different people, but yeah, that's facts. But anyways, oh my god, this week has been fucking crazy, dude.
A little bit. A lot of Twitter drama.
Yeah, but I guess I actually want to start off with some happy shit that we've been waiting for I don't know many, like fucking 10 years, maybe longer.
A little something that was confirmed but not confirmed for a long time.
I mean, we always knew it because we know it, but like Bubbleen is canonical,
and like the way that Rebecca Sugar fought for that, she shouldn't have had to fight for that, but she did.
No. And it was amazing because Adventure Time finally had their series finale. And at the end, we get like this beautiful, beautiful fucking finally a kiss between Princess Bubblegum and Marceline. And it's everything I ever wanted. And I didn't know I needed it that much.
It was really, really cute. I'm super stoked that happened. You might have peeped it on our Instagram.
Yeah, we was like freaking out. I was like, okay, while the world is like burning itself down, the gays are getting to eat, and this is the best. I'm just so happy for that.
Yeah, we're getting fed and all that shit.
Love it, love it, love it. And then I guess going back to Twitter, what else happened? There was a very interesting ad we saw.
Yeah, I mean, everybody at this point knows what's going on with Cape and with Nike, which is super interesting. But what also got a lot of attention as a side result was this new Nike ad in Mexico, which was really, really cute.
It was adorable, dude. I was like, wait, what am I watching right now? This is like, I thought it was gonna take like a epic turn somewhere else, and then like it just ended up being this super empowering, beautiful thing to see, like all these like brown people, brown women running to something. And I was just like, this is so lit. Like, this is all the athletes just defining stereotypes. They're just out here living and thriving.
Yeah, it was freaking dope. And a lot of people have a lot of opinions about this whole Nike stuff. And 100%, it's at the end of the day, it's about business for them. Definitely. But what it means to me outside of it being just business is like, that popular culture is becoming people having rights and people being able to stand up for what's right. And I think that there's nothing wrong with that part of it. You know what I mean? No matter Nike's intentions, what comes of it is more important.
Yeah, I think that the fact that they're actually like reflecting, like capitalism is reflecting the society is a little interesting. At least like, you know, like 0.2%. That's huge, because this is not some shit they would ever pull before. Like, well, Nike's done shit like this before, but to do it right now is very important. So, fuck yes.
Yeah, like there's this podcast called Uncolonial History. They did an episode about shoes like a month before this Nike stuff happened, and it's really interesting how shoes and social justice have intersected in the past. Like I said, it's all business. It's all business to them. But they definitely know how facts. To capitalize correctly. And it's been really interesting to see how it's been along for the ride. And Nike, this is just I wouldn't be surprised if they did a part two. They're like, yep. So you see how we called it 3 weeks ago?
No, that's it. I mean, yeah, they're still using probably child labor and not paying their labor enough and probably not having safe warehouses for their labor to work, for human beings to be. But look, the world is falling apart and we got to focus on the very few positive things we have. So shout out to that.
Exactly.
Yeah. No. And speaking of positive things that we have, a shout out to Amazon Prime.
Oh, yeah. They've got your favorite. Wait. Yeah, your favorite.
Well, I mean, it's not like my favorite, but it's cute. And it's not that cute. Disobedience is finally on Amazon Prime. So if you queers didn't see it in theaters, you can go watch it on Amazon Prime. You can rent that hoe now. Like, come on, y'all. It's there. Watch it. I don't know.
Or if you, like myself, are not so into the movie, you could also go to Hulu instead and watch her actual favorite, Mosquita y Mari.
Of all time. Of all time. Guys, oh my god, I hadn't seen Mosquita y Mari in like 2 years, which is a long time for me.
Okay. Maybe like a year and 2 months, because I'm pretty sure you watched it before we did our first episode.
I didn't. I went off straight memory, dude. Wow. Like, I didn't watch Mosquita y Mari before our very first episode. I just watched it so many times before that I remembered literally everything. I was like, no, jeez. Boo, I remember everything. I fucking love it, dude. Guys, go watch Mosquita y Mari. Like, I smiled the entire time through. Like, I just smiled the whole time. Like, even during the sad parts, I was just like, oh my god, I feel so seen every time I watch it, and I can't explain that. Like, there's nothing that feels like me watching Mosquita y Mari. Like, I just feel so validated, and I get it. I get it when white people watch themselves now. I was like, wow, I see myself for the first time, and it's crazy. It's so important, guys. Ugh.
Speaking of seeing yourself, dude, I feel like, I don't know what's gotten into me in the month of September, but I've been like just super seeking out content that is relatable to me, like really hard. that little movie, To All the Boys I've Loved Before, that I avoided watching for a long time. I was like, this isn't for me. Like, I'm glad that it's out there. And I was like, this isn't for me. And then when Sierra Burgess Is a Loser came out, I was pretty excited because I was like, it's a big girl and it's representation. And the actress is openly bi. She's not gay in the movie. And they make a lot of references to her just not being gay. And I'm like, okay, that's not necessary, but thanks. I gotta say, like, I mostly enjoyed watching that movie, but there's a lot of problematic things in it, which kind of sucks. Like, I ended up watching To All the Boys I've Loved Before afterwards, because I'm a fiend. Like, I have to watch everything. So I watched it and I was like, there's so many things that movie did right that Sierra Burgess did wrong. And like, there was a moment,
really?
Yeah, there's like a moment where there's like, where consent is not given that I don't like. They used deafness as a ploy, as a joke in a certain part of the movie where I was like, that's not okay.
Ableism, strike one.
There's like, they start off with her being this like strong character who doesn't give a fuck about what people think of her looks, and then they turn her into this like same old insecure big girl who hates herself. And I'm like, just like, stick to what you started off with. Like, that's what we really need out there right now. Not that insecurity isn't completely embedded in almost every big girl's lives. Like, that's, yeah, like, it's a big part of it.
It's a normal part of, it's like,
that's,
yeah,
the way that lives. Society is set up right now. But like, you still didn't have to, they didn't have to take it to where they did. There's a lot of disappointing things in it that I think they could have done better. I will say that. And then that to All the Boys I've Loved Before movie, I have to give it its praise. It was a good movie.
A lot of consent, a lot of responsible decisions being made for as teenagers that like we never got to see growing up. It's like, oh no, I'm drinking kombucha. You know, like, I was like, oh, I thought of you, Mike, when he said
that. I was going to say, like, me, I feel seen.
I was like, oh my god, would that be weird if I texted her right now? Like, dude. But I didn't know if you've seen it yet. But I was like, oh, look at him pulling a Maitha, drinking kombucha. Yeah. Okay. That's it's a really good teen movie. I think it's well written and well done. And I fucking love that movie. And it's not for me. And I still love it.
I still thought it was great. It's great that movie Searching and Crazy Rich Asians are all like thriving right now. I was fortunate enough to see all of them.
Oh, dude.
And
Dude, there's another one that's called Kim Convenience that came out, and I haven't watched it yet. I haven't like set aside time because I've been kind of wrapped up in what we're going to be talking about today for a while. But Kim's Convenience is also on Netflix, and they said that it's like they're comparing it to like kind of One Day at a Time in the way that it's giving representation. So I'm all about it. I can't wait to see it.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, no, I haven't seen even a trailer, but I did see it on the Netflix queue.
Yes, dude, maybe that can be like a future episode. I honestly think it could be.
But moving on our list of current topics, because we're doing this thing where we're very current right now. But there was kind of bittersweet news that happened for us yesterday, for you guys a few days ago. But the queen of all queens lost, Serena Williams.
The queen of everything, yeah.
She lost, and that sucks. But the person that did win was you want to tell us about this person that won?
Yeah, so actually, I want to give a huge shout out to Naomi Osaka. She's like 20 years old, and she just beat Serena Williams in the U.S. Open, and she's the first Japanese Haitian woman to win the U.S. Open. So it's not just like super dope that it's like a young kid and she got to play her idol. Like, that would have been enough, and she even said as much. But for her to be the first Japanese and the first Haitian woman to win, and there's been a lot of like erasure of her Haitian culture, so I think it's important to put both side by side, you know, like it's so important. And I was like, wait a minute, there's two like brown skinned women right now at the U.S. Open in the finals. Like, this is, I hate tennis. I think it's like the most, I think it's up there as like golf. Damn. Like, it's for bougie white people. Yeah, I don't like tennis or golf, and I think it's for bougie white people. But to see that in 2018 was like super beautiful for me. And shout out to Serena Williams for being a class act, and fuck all the refs, and fuck most tennis organizations that keep doing this to Serena. This isn't new. Like, since we were kids, they've been fucking with her and calling her like the worst shit you can ever see. So fuck them forever. But shout out to both of them.
Definitely. Damn. This is the part where it gets kind of sad. As far as current topics, but there's a couple of shitty things that kind of happened towards the end of this week, too. One of them is very Dallas-based, and I totally felt for Dallas.
It's super close to home. It's super close.
I mean, it's just fucked up. Like, I can't even, like, it's like a bad Onion story, but, like, it's real. Like, it's so shitty. Like,
yeah, so I guess to say that what happened is that a Dallas cop broke into someone's house, broke into, let's say his name, Botham Jean's house, and murdered him. And you have to say his name, and you have to say her name as well. Her name's Amber Geyer, and it's Sunday, she hasn't been arrested. There have been a lot of protests going around. Our homegirl was on TV the other day, Maria Yolisma, shout out to her.
Shout out, Maria.
I want to remind everyone, as this continues to happen, to take care of themselves, find whatever self-care that you need. If you need to get off social media completely, like, I only go on there to like shit about Cardi B and shoes right now, and I watch Just Libby videos, and I really just try to focus on stuff like that, focus on positive things, because it's, everything is so heavy out here, guys, and it's the fact that something like this has happened in Dallas so close to me and to a place. I know exactly how that building works. My mom used to work in that building. She used to clean in that building. So I know how it works. Come on, guys. You don't accidentally walk into someone's home and murder them. Like, it's really ridiculous, and it's really heavy. And I don't know. I don't know what to say, because I'm just feeling as dark and heavy as all of this is. So it's kind of difficult.
Yeah, man, it's hard out there, and it's hard to avoid a lot of negative things. I mean, this Mac Miller business, you know, it's not even like I'm a fan, dear. Right? Like, I'm not even, like, I've never been into his music or anything.
I was a fan, yeah.
But you, like, what happens when shit like this happens is that you start getting to know these people and details about their lives. Like, I didn't know that Mac Miller was like the same age as me. Like, I didn't know all these things, and I'm just like, it's just like, it weighs on you a little bit, like, and it shouldn't, because these people are so far away from you, but it does, and you're just like, damn, like,
It, I mean, I'm a fan, so like for me, it like what happened is like he's our age, and he's been putting out music that he's been doing something interesting and beautiful with his life is that he's been creating music and he produced for SZA. So I mean, Warm Winds, Hijack. I mean, I think Warm Winds and You Are, but he's been producing music for people I love. He's been making music that I love, and what's beautiful about that is that you get to be exposed to something someone makes and it's beautiful and it's art. But at the same time, we've been getting what we've been seeing on the internet is really heavy and dark. And did you want to lead into that? Because I'm his fan and I don't care about any of this other bullshit that's happening on the internet right now.
I mean, there's not a whole lot to say, right? Like, just it's just it always happens after these like big like deaths, I guess you can say, where everybody starts saying like, oh, take care of your friends, look out for them, do this, do that, and then like a week later it's like, oh, self-care, like take care of yourself. And then it's hard to balance all this stuff and you don't even know what to think and it's overwhelming at the end of the day.
Yeah, it is. And at the same time, it leads back to like United States having a really crazy opioid addiction and shit we're not addressing because everything else is happening, you know? And it's really hard. Living and existing is really difficult. And these drugs are laced, you guys. Like, there have been a bad batch of like opioids that have fentanyl in them. And fentanyl is what killed Michael Jackson. Fentanyl is what's, it's like 20 times stronger than heroin or some shit. I don't know. I'm just going off of like what I can remember. I don't, it's pretty strong. It's extremely stronger than heroin. And like, be careful out here, guys. Take care of yourselves. Like, addiction is a bitch. And if you've never gone through something like that, shut the fuck up. Don't judge. You can't just say, you know, it's a drug addiction either. It's hard out here. Just existing, just being a human right now is really difficult. So, it's heavy, bro. Like, and then the Ariana Grande bullshit they're trying to pull. I mean, she's already been through like the most, and I just want to give her a hug, because toxic masculinity is alive and
Yeah,
thriving.
Ariana's just been going through one thing after another. Like, I don't know, man. This shit is a lot. Let's vote.
God must be a woman because she's like really, man. I'm praying for her. Like, I don't even like pray and I just want her to be okay, you know?
Right, let's veer away from the tough topics.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, let's get away from that. It's super fucking heavy. But, did you want to discuss our main thing today? But, I guess you'd seen something else he was in. If
Yeah,
not, we didn't
I
cover it.
mentioned it a little bit in our intro, but I watched some of this Netflix show called Atypical, which I was watching and I was like, okay, this is interesting. It's basically about a like teenage boy who has he's on the spectrum of autism, and how he's like decided that he wants to get himself a girlfriend. And I think that I was like, oh, this concept's interesting. This is cool. I started watching it because Raul Castillo is in it, and I wanted to just kind of check out some of his other work. He's not like really a big character, and he's in several episodes, but his storyline is very much just around being like this dude that's like an escape for this like older white woman. He's a
Oh,
side
is he a
piece.
side piece?
He's not the focus of the story at all. And what I ended up finding out is that this show was deemed by another person who's also on the autism spectrum and an excellent writer that its portrayal of autism is pretty problematic because it just shows him being kind of douchey to a lot of people and using autism as an excuse and like, you know what I mean? Like it's just it didn't do it justice from what I'm hearing. And that there was a couple of other things which I can't think of on the top of my head, but basically at the end of the day I wouldn't really super recommend it. Like, and I was
Oh,
kind of
it's
I
one of
had my hopes
those.
up too, because it's mainly based around this white family, but a lot of the side characters, like a lot of the supporting characters, including Ariela Barrera and Raul Castillo, like they're all people of color. There's a bunch of them, and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool, but no, I don't think I'll be finishing it.
Damn, that sucks, dude. That sucks, because, like, it's finally giving you the thing that you asked for, but then it's like, but we're not going to respect it, you know? And let's hire more autistic people, guys. Like, if you're going to do a story that you don't understand, hire more people from the community to check you.
Well, that's,
you know,
the, like, thing.
That's so important to
that's
get checked.
Part of
did they
what
do
the
that?
Article kind of talked about, and I can't remember verbatim like what they said, but it was something along the lines of, like, they were constantly checking in with professionals who knew their shit, you know what I mean? But the thing is that, like, they were doing their thing, they were at the head of it, like the producers and stuff, and then they would just go and consult real quick with a person and be like, oh, what do you think of this, what do you think of that? But until you have somebody on, like, leading it,
on
until
staff.
You have somebody at the forefront, at the, like, leading the damn thing, who understands it, it's not gonna be good, it's not gonna be respectful as you want, as accurate as you want, because you're just, like, consulting here and there. Like, they need a person with autism is perfectly capable of doing this, and they're the ones who should be at the head of it, and until that happens, we're not gonna get a show that they deserve.
And that's why I think what we're covering today is so important, because at every step of this film, they were going straight to the source, and the source was there the entire time consulting. It wasn't just like a quick coming in and coming out. It was like, you're a part of this process. And let's tell them what we're talking about today, since it's one of the few things that's led by something, by someone who created it, and it's coming from a very, very personal place. Like, this
yeah.
is...
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say that it's led by him, but I think that it was still very well... well done, and done with he had
a lot to do with
the
film.
You know, he was very selective. The author of the book was very selective with who he chose to make his film, because the person that was making the film had the right idea, and I think that was very important.
And he, and when they talk about it, any of the press are doing, they talk about how Justin Torres was there at every point of the movie going, you know, yes, no, I'm okay with this. This is okay. Like, he was actually very much involved in the process of the entire film and the screenplay and everything. So I thought that was really interesting. So let's talk about what we're going to talk about today.
In the title of our episode.
Yes.
And it took us a long time to get here because, damn, we have a long ass intro. But I'm excited to talk about this. This is going to be all about it. We're going to talk about the movie, and we're going to talk about the book, and we're going to start off. We'll tell you when the split happens, but we're going to start off talking about it in a non-spoilery fashion, and then we're going to get into some of the things that didn't make it into the movies and some of the things that did, and so forth. Basically, we'll start off non-spoilery, then get spoilery. We will warn you.
Yeah, you're gonna get that warning, because it's really real. So, okay, Maite, what did you think of this film? And
well, just to give it a little bit of background, this movie, like, or this book came out years ago. Mm. The production of the something like that. The production
2011?
Of the movie, yeah. And by production, I mean pre-production. Like, they told Raul Castillo about this role and, like, unofficially gave it to him in 2015. And didn't start filming for another year, mm-hmm. just because of the way that things were set up and finding the right cast. Because he was, like, one of the very early cast members. And then it took them a really long time to cast the three young boys at the head of the film, which is Manny, Joel, and Jonah. And it just took them a really long time, I'm getting this information from Raul from that Q&A. And I thought it was super interesting how he mentions that, like, the filming, like, well, they, I guess they are at first, we're going to try doing it from the same perspective as they did in the book, which in the book, the main character is a little older, telling the story about him as in the past, whereas in the movie, he is just who he is in the movie, you know, at that age.
Yeah. No, yeah. And it's, and I thought that was a really interesting thing to do in the movie, was to have him be a little bit older. Him to be 10 years old and show it from his perspective and kind of leave it at that age. I thought that was a good move, honestly. I liked
Absolutely.
That change they made, and the movie was so good. I guess we want to give him like a short plot synopsis,
and it's hard to give a plot synopsis because you're really just getting like an insight to their life. It isn't like a three act movie, you know what I mean? It isn't like there isn't like There is a climax, no, but there's also not. Like several, you know what I mean? There's several points that you could really talk about. It's unlike a lot of movies that we see today.
And that's actually what makes it stand out. And I thought it was beautiful. But I mean, it is about a young boy growing up in a family. There's three of them, and he's dealing with a lot happening with his father and his mother and growing up in upstate New York and being like the only family of color out there. So they're kind of dealing with that kind of like alienation and also poverty, you know, and a lot of machismo. So there's so much in this movie.
There is, and it's kind of told in the movie, at least it's told through the perspective of one of three brothers. So we the animals refers to them and how they like kind of they walk around as a pack, and they kind of have they're kind of running off of their instincts and their urges and their curiosities. And it's really interesting that they kind of they stuck to the way that it was told in the book, where it was kind of like them seeing themselves from the outside in. I don't know how to explain it too well, but it was just like these three little boys, and they're growing up and they're seeing things that are traumatic. You know, we always look back at our traumas, but you're fully in the trauma when it's happening, and it's intense. It's really, really intense.
It's very intense. And I think another really important note to make about the movie is that it's the author and the movie is it's actually told from his real it's based on his real life. And I thought that was a really we always ask for this, you know, we always ask for people to give us things that they know, write about the things that you know things you understand, and give us content that you've lived through. And that's what they're doing. They're giving us very, very personal content, you know. Of course, not all of it's going to be exactly the same, but I think it's very important because we're looking at trauma through the lens of someone who's actually lived it versus like an outside point of view, which is a lot of movies. It's people writing about things that they didn't experience firsthand, or, you know, they were told this. But this is very different because it's very personal, and it's coming from Justin Torres is a queer person of color, a queer man of color. And so it's so important for us to like look at this movie and see the authenticity of it. And that's what we ask for.
It's so interesting the way they talk about, because in the book it's very clear, it's like, yes, like this is a work of fiction, this has come from the imagination of the author, you know what I mean, basically like writing it off as like this didn't exactly happen, you know what I mean. But like you said, like they have talked about how it is loosely based on his life, how it is based on his experiences. And this movie crosses the line over and over and over. And the characters that you're supposed to sometimes sympathize with, you also really want to hate and dislike, especially because of their behaviors. And it's able to cross that line over and over without losing you, because it's real and it's based on truth. And like, that's what really keeps this movie like standing, and then overall makes you really appreciative of like of being able to have seen it.
Yeah, because like we can't like personally criticize this character because this is told from someone's trauma, and you get to see how soft Raul Castillo's character is and how tender he can be. And there's parts in this movie that are just so sweet and so intimate, and things that, you know, you often don't get that point of view in movies. You know, like the movie would just show you trauma, 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 and you're meant to hate the character. But because it's so personal to Justin Torres, like, it's gray. Like, you're looking at Raul Castillo's character and you're going, there's two things battling with inside him. And Raul Castillo's acting is so amazing that you can see that. And he brought such humanity to such, like, what I guess from the outside in we would deem as like what unforgivable, you know. But he's managed to kind of play this actor in a way that this character in a way that like we're able to see that there's so much humanity existing at the same time that there's so much violence. And shout out to the acting in this movie, because like little Jonah and Raul Castillo, like I feel like anytime they're in a scene together, like I feel like I'm reading the book. And it was so
really interesting
done.
To find out that all three of the boys were brand new to acting. None of them had done anything like that before. And it was really interesting hearing from Raul how how they acted on set and how it, like, it's always more difficult to work with children because they require so much care, and the way that they had to maneuver, like, dealing with them being in a scene where there's really traumatic things and, like, trying to protect them from that. So it's super interesting. We're probably going to start getting spoilery pretty soon if we want to be able to get into it, but basically, like, to wrap up in a summary, like, this is an extremely personal film about a very young boy whose mother is white and his father is Puerto Rican, and having to deal with just feeling completely different from his brothers and his family, even though he's so much a part of them, and how that's why it's we, the animals, you know what I mean? And it's an extremely beautifully shot film. If you have a chance to see it, it's already out in more cities, so definitely check it out as soon as you can.
Oh, and I love the way they shot this film, like all those aerial views we're getting of, like, the forest, the woods, the city that they live in, the countryside. I thought it was so beautiful. Like, I could honestly, the way that it translated from book to movie, it felt perfectly done.
There was a lot of changes, which we'll talk about in this more spoilery side of the podcast. But speaking of production, they mentioned, obviously, part of the movie is based in the summer, and they filmed it in the summer of 2016, and then they waited like 6 months until it got super snowy in New York, went back and filmed the rest of it, which was really cool. And you can kind of see them, like, slightly get older.
Oh, wow, that is interesting. You know what I mean? One of the kids even has, like, a little mustache at the end, the oldest brother, Manny. And I was like, oh, wow, like, this is interesting.
They're meant,
like,
to,
time,
like,
has
be,
passed.
Like, a couple years so. Older, but obviously they were only 6 months older, but it's still really cool to see and then to learn how they shot it.
I can't reiterate how much I really loved Raul Castillo's acting in this. It was, he's going places. Like, this is just the start of him, because not even just the start, this is, like, a journey on the way to, like, something so much bigger, because I see this acting and I was just completely torn apart by his character, because, dude, at the end of this movie, everyone, like, no one was able to leave their seats. Like, everyone just sat in the theater and just kind of soaked in it, and that's what the ending, not even the ending, the whole thing that you're watching, that's what it does to you. It just kind of, it's something we've all seen and known, you know, but we can't explain how deep some of these things go, you know. And it's for everyone in there, I think everyone was just dealing with their shit at the very end. They were thinking about it, and I've never been speechless after a movie like this entire year. This is the first movie that I've been completely speechless afterwards, and I just needed like 2 hours.
It's funny
to just
you
be
mentioned
alone.
That because like right after I watched the movie, it was the Q&A, so nobody left their seats, but on purpose. And at the beginning of the Q&A, everybody was really quiet. I think, like you said, they were processing, and luckily there was some other dude moderating, and he was the one asking questions, because I think the rest of the audience was just like, oh my god. And when they finally started letting the audience have their questions, like, people weren't really like putting their hands up. I think they were still a little shy about it, still processing. And as Raul continued to kind of talk about it, because there was more questions after that, but like he would talk about really personal stuff and really production side stuff. But one of the things that I think is important to bring up is that one of the audience members asked how he, because he's, you know, he's an actor, he has to really get himself into the brain of this character. And I will go ahead and, like, it's spoilery from now on, by the way.
What's your rating on it before we spoil?
No cafecitos.
Yeah, I think like 5 pan dulces. Yeah, I'm not exaggerating when I say that. It's
the film. I would say that I like the book less, even though it's a lovely book. I like the movie a lot better.
Extremely well written.
It's a very interesting book. Like, I loved it and I read it all the way through, no problem. I like a lot of the decisions that they made in the film, and I think that it did better the story. But
cool. Okay. Yeah. Let's cut it off now. Guys, we're going into the spoilers. So if you feel a way, if you don't want to know, because there's some things in there and you're allowed to process it when you need to, come back to this part, go rate and review, go subscribe.
Follow us at CYC Podcast on everything.
Yes. Yes. On everything. And we're going to get into it now because it's, oh my God. Okay. So, dude,
So yeah, but back to what I was mentioning about, they asked him, they're like, okay, so how do you separate, even though of course he can't really separate himself from that character, but how does he play a character that is so, does so many evil, profoundly evil things, and especially in the book, but more so, less so in the movie. He does
less really, so in the movie.
He does a lot of horrible things, and they're like, how do you separate yourself from that? And he basically said, like, in order for me to play that character, I can't see him as evil. I have to see him as just like a flawed regular human being. And it was super interesting to me.
And them flaws, girl, those flaws is like what the fuck.
Yeah, like he did a lot of, like, honestly, almost every single bad point in the movie where you're like, fuck, like each part had to do with Raul Castillo, with the dad doing something fucked up, except for maybe one.
I mean, honestly, I think the movie was way more forgiving of, like,
so much
of every
more.
Character, honestly, because, like, Raul Castillo's character, there was a point where he dragged the mom into the room, and I'm pretty sure she said no. Like, no, the consent was not given, and he 100%. Basically, like, she was grabbing onto the walls, and she was yelling out no, mm-hmm. and yet he grabbed her and pulled her into the room, and that's what Jonah's character is witnessing in the book. Like, it's really fucked up in the book. Like, that, when I saw that, I felt like they made decisions in the movie because I felt like they thought the audience would completely reject the film if they left certain things in, which I think they would. Honestly, when you read it, it's not the same as witnessing it. And I think just witnessing it, I don't think the audience would be able to forgive the father's character at all. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many things in the book that he does that are unforgivable. And to have them shot, like, on screen and to see it, that's, you can't unsee that shit. So I like the changes they made because the book is just so much more bleak.
And I think I understand why in the book the dad beats up Manny, like, straight up beats him up, like, not beats him up. And I think that there really wasn't a way to shoot that, you know what I mean? Like, there's, how do you can't do that, you can't shoot that because there's a young boy actor there, like, and you can't
put them through that shit. That's so much trauma.
There's no way that you can fucking do that. And I understand why that was cut. I think it maybe in that case was a little less about the audience and a little more about production. Like, you just can't do that. Like, that's a kid.
It's illegal.
Yeah. And I mean, of course, another, you can fake mm-hmm. stuff like that, but, like, you can't do it. Not what he did in the book. You just can't.
And there was another part that I thought was, they were nicer to the boys. I think that was another part that I think they thought, okay, the audience is going to reject this again, is when in the book, the kids all hit the mom. Like, she's the one that they're beating.
Not the dad.
Because they want... Yeah. Not the dad. The dad is not on top. The mother's on top, and that's who Manny hits. Because in the book, there's this running theme that Manny and Joel?
Mm-hmm.
Joel? They're the ones that are already becoming mini dads. They're just like their pops. And you can tell by the way they already are starting to resent and hate the mother just for, like, being and existing. Like, they're trying, they, instead of seeing the father's flaws, and he's extremely flawed, they project all that shit onto the mom, and you can see it already, it's manifesting. And I thought that would have been something that, like, okay, the audience isn't going to forgive the kids now, you know, like, kids, they're supposed to be, like, forgivable. But I think in the book there was a lot of shit they were doing that, if you see that, if you see little kids hitting a woman, and they're not that little anymore, it's kind of starting to get into that, like, this is really unforgivable for them. Like, we can't forgive the kids either. So it's, again, they made a lot of decisions, I think, just for the sake of us, and to not make us hate these characters, because it was a lot. Even the mom, even the scene where they're supposed to be, like, fucking, and the kids are supposed to be in the bathroom, and the mom knows that they're there, sees them, and she continues to get fucked. I thought that was another thing that they were like, well, we're not going to forgive the mom. You know, and I was just like, what the fuck? Like, this is, when I was reading it, I was just kind of like, reality is that fucked up. But at the same time, I was like, the audience is just not going to accept mm-hmm. this.
They changed, like I said, they changed the perspective. Like, this is not the perspective of a teen. This is a perspective of, like, a preteen at best. And A lot was made.
Well, in the book, he's 6 years old.
Right, in the book, he's like he's seven. He just turned seven. And
he turned seven.
And in the movie, he just turned 10. So towards the later end of the film, he's like 11. Still extremely, extremely young. And like, they did so much to bring it down. They even added in this element, which I actually love so much in the movie, but this is not, of course, there's no way to put this in the book. The drawings, yeah. And like that you see him drawing and writing in this journal all the way through the movie, or as in the book, you have no idea this journal exists until the end. But in the journal is brought to life in this really beautiful animated way, and it makes it seem even more so from a young perspective, because it's imaginative, you know what I mean? It's his traumas laid out on paper, and it's...
And it made it easier for us to digest a lot of the things that
he's feeling.
He's feeling or he's seeing, and that they're not going to obviously show is like a lot more of the beatings that the father was giving the mother. Like, and they were so bad in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way that we would accept that. So it would be so bleak, and the tone of the movie would be completely different if they made it like exactly like the book. So I felt like by projecting it in a child's like doodles and drawings made it so much easier for us, and it made us understand what like level of trauma he's at, and like where he was with his pain and how he was processing it. And it's really again dealing with that kind of trauma, and not just like one thing, it's just like one thing after the other. And it's, you know, they were trying to compare it to Moonlight. I don't see the comparison.
From what I've heard, I don't think it's anything like it. I haven't seen Moonlight because I'm fake as fuck. And
yeah.
But like I said, I'm just 100% happy that they did it this way. The ending especially. But let's talk a little bit about some more stuff that didn't make it into the film. One in particular that you immediately mentioned that I immediately, when I was reading the book, was like, how did they not put this in?
What the fuck?
And I guess probably budget-wise, yeah. And then story-wise, it wasn't important enough. And even in the book, like, it was just never brought up again.
it was like a mm-hmm. one-off, but at the same time, yeah. Okay, so in what happened in the book, Michael?
Well, we'll start with the movie. Like, in the movie, there's a large section where the mom goes into a deep depression, and she stops feeding the kids, and they're hungry as fuck, and they're like just struggling, and nothing gets her out of the depression until the husband comes back, which is it adds to their abusive sort of domestic violence type of relationship and how that cycle works. But in the book, it's a little different. Like, they don't go, I don't think they go quite as long without eating, and I think she gets up a lot to like smoke and shit like that. Whereas in the movie, she's just asleep. But eventually, she gets taken out of her, like, manic depression. Or not fully, maybe, but, like, enough that her coworker, who is, like, apparently a very, like tall or something Asian woman, she...
Tall, buff, right, Asian,
like,
woman,
super buff,
yeah.
Lady comes by from her job and is like, what the fuck is going on? And then you see this woman be... Or you read about this woman being extremely tender towards the mom, and like,
well, not just that, she brought the kids.
Yeah,
food.
Like,
she just
knew.
Like, she came over
like,
with
this
food.
This is not the first
and
time.
And she didn't ask.
I don't think it's mm-mm. the first time.
Like, and when she called, like before the father was calling, this woman from her job called and spoke with Jonah, and from whatever she understood from whatever conversation they had, because she hadn't been showing up to work, the mom hadn't been showing up to work, and so she just automatically knew. She came over with food, and then we get this incredibly tender scene in the book a moment in the book where the mom is given some kind of humanity, and you're even seeing that maybe there's something else inside of this woman aside from her husband. And it's never explored. It's never, even in the book, because this is the point of view of Jonah. And in the book, the woman comes over, and it's the most beautiful thing is that, you know, she starts kissing, like, all her bruises, her eyelids, her eyebrows, and the kids are just staring, watching, because they don't know what's going on. And then the woman kisses the mom, and from then on, the mom gets broken out of her depression. And I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, it was just like... I mean, obviously, that's another one of these things that makes the book and in general the movie seem very real, that not every, like, typically in a movie, every single little thing in the movie is meant to add something to the storytelling, whereas in this, it was just a really real moment that probably resonated with him. And so, like, it doesn't 100% fit in, which is why it probably didn't make it into the film. But it was just such a, I think it could have been such an interesting thing to have in there in comparison to later on Jonah's story, because Jonah is a queer young boy and he's figuring that out.
And I think that's maybe why it stood out so much for him, is because he was kind of figuring something out about himself too. And for him to even remember that and then never bring it up again in the book, I think that means that that really meant a lot for him to see that, you know. Like, I think that was probably one of the few times he saw some his mother be treated that, like, tenderly, and it wasn't by his father. So I think that's why it stuck out to him, and also because he's queer and he's seeing this, and he's like, you know, he doesn't know, no one knows, they don't know what's going on. And I thought it was beautiful in the book, and I actually thought it was cool they never brought it up again, but it was what got her out of her depression, what got her back to work. She started feeding them again and taking care of them, and all because this woman came over and showed her some kind of tenderness. I don't know what was going on with their relationship at work, but that was a moment in the book that I'm like, whoa.
Right, that was super, super intense, super cool to have in the book, if I'm being honest. But yeah, they never talked about it again at all. There's another thing that I wanted to bring up that was different from the book and the movie. And this is actually something that wasn't gonna make it into the film, but Raul Castillo really
fought for it.
He fought for it really hard. So basically there's a moment in the book where it's a completely different scene that didn't make it into the movie at all, but during that time in the book where they're at, like, he basically leaves Jonah, he takes Jonah with him on a trip, and then he leaves him at this museum thing, and he comes back and he finds him dancing, and he ends up saying, like, god damn, I got me a pretty one. And
that was kind of beautiful.
It was in the book, I think it's meant to be less beautiful.
Oh, it's meant to be, and
even I think it was definitely made to seem a lot more beautiful in the film. Another thing that I appreciated about it just made it a lot easier on me. But basically they cut that whole scene out, so they had no reason to have that line, but Raul fought for it, and they added a scene where the dad is cutting Jonah's hair, and he says, god damn, I got me a pretty one. And it's completely from a
different... And we know what that means.
Right. Yeah, it's a completely different context. And he's doing it, you know what I mean? He's doing it in a much more tender way than the dad did in the book. So that's just another way that they made Raul Castillo's character a lot more likable. They made him a lot, like, less evil with these little tender moments.
Yeah, because in the book, I read it as beautiful, but I get it now. Because watching the movie, I understood what it really meant in the book, because when I saw that, I was like, oh, so he's figuring out his son's, like, queer, like, basically, right?
Well, sort of. I think he doesn't, soft. I think soft might be a better word for it. I don't think immediately he's like, oh, my son likes men. I think he's more like, oh my god, this kid is not, he's not, like, as savage as the other boys. He's not as, like, you know, ruthless as he is.
I think they hold the same kind of weight, because, like, you know, if you don't fit into the stereotypical machismo bullshit thing, like, the whole thing is they call them, like, queers. They have all types of words for men that don't fit that box,
right?
You know, and I feel like they're the main ones who are like, oh, look at him, he's, and he even says it himself in the book, he's like, you know, I'm pansy like or something.
Yeah,
like,
they called him a lot of
that line,
a lot of horrible names in the book, which they left a lot of it out in the movie. But that was, I guess, one thing that Raul fought for to get put in there, and it wasn't necessarily said as negatively context wise in the movie. But I thought it was good that they put it in, because it did add to them differentiating Jonah, you know what I mean? Like, because he felt very othered. And that was a really big thing in the book.
It was a huge thing in the book, and that, I guess that was the way they were trying to put it into the movie, to other him. And I think they did an amazing job in the film, like, because you can tell he's othered, like, the way his brothers treat him, and, like, you know, he's so weird, you know, like, the little off comments they make to him that just make you like, whoa. And I felt that when I was watching that, my own personal feelings. Right. So I was like, I'm feeling seen, but this is not the way I want it. Like,
it's,
but
yeah, it's like they cut out the whole, like a big chunk of the end. They completely changed it and they added in a lot of stuff. And once again, to make it all seem a lot more innocent. I appreciate it. Yeah. I appreciate it. It's still harsh.
The book was goddamn.
It was very harsh. Yeah. Like it went from instead of doing this creepy pedophile thing, like thing that, you know, happens to a lot of young queer boys because they don't have proper sex education and proper treatment. You know what I mean? But I'm glad that it was cut because it's just it's a lot. It's really heavy.
In the
movie, it's a lot more innocent, and he kind of walks away from this tender moment, which we don't get to really see the end of, with this other boy, this older boy.
Yeah, he's a lot older. I was mad uncomfortable. It was still weird.
It was still a weird age difference, but not as bad as in the book. And
the book is wild. Mm-hmm.
So
for other reasons,
he still comes back to he comes back home after like. Straying and he sees that his notebook has been found, his deepest darkest secrets have been found, and he immediately turns to anger, and this is where I felt seen because he just immediately was so angry at his parents and at his family, and it's like a form of self-defense, getting so angry and blowing your parents off as incompetent, and like in your mind you have to do that shit sometimes. You have to, as a young kid, when you're feeling rejected, you, in order to stop feeling rejected, you have to start like belittling your parents or whoever it is that's hurting you, and you have to attack them head on. And that's kind of what he did. He had a bit of a manic episode and started attacking them physically and with his words.
Yeah, I don't blame him, because that the ending scene is different because and that was a part of his life that he talks about openly, is that at the very ending of the book, he gets sent out to a psych ward after they find his journal.
In the book, at least.
In the book. Yeah. He's written this journal and he's talked about sexual fantasies in there with men. And again, like the dad, the whole family, like them taking him to a psych ward, like in the book was just, fuck, I needed to just sit there after they finished the book, because that was a lot to process.
Right.
And I didn't even go through that, and it was really hard and very difficult, and I like that change in the movie. Again, the movie's just so forgiving to all the characters, whereas the book is just not. Yeah. Like
And the movie ending, I think, is a lot more interesting, and a lot. I like that it was a little more open-ended, and that it didn't put in the psych ward part of it necessarily, because it was like you just got to see his feelings only, instead of what, you know, you got to see what was somewhat in his control instead of seeing other people controlling his life. And
it was way more hopeful than the book. Like, and I love that. I love that the whole tone of the movie is just so much more innocent and hopeful and childlike,
even though it's still shocking. And at the end, you're still really shocked because you see a lot of images in that notebook that are very obviously horrified his family, and they didn't understand. And then you see the kid, and I think that this was really symbolic and interesting. You see Jonah attack his mom, and I think, to me, and this is how I interpreted it, I think him attacking his mom was him trying to be like his dad, you know what I mean, trying to finally succumb to this heteronormative thing that he thinks is what he should be. He thinks he should be like his dad and his brothers, and beating on his mom is like his reaction. He's like, if I do this, like, maybe they'll, like, they won't see me as other. And I think that's really shitty. That says a really shitty thing about machismo, and a really shitty thing about, like, what? Like, they think it's worse to be gay.
I don't think he was doing it consciously. I think it just came to the point where, like, his anger, like the rest of them, could only be directed towards the mom, like you said, because of the toxic masculinity that is presented. And that's what this movie really is about, toxic masculinity destroying everything around it, which, I mean, it's been a theme in our entire history as human beings, is toxic masculinity kills everyone. It destroys everything it touches. And you can see that it's even destroyed the one person who you thought it wouldn't. It has. At the end, that's what you see. And in the book, it's what you see a little bit different. But even here, I feel like it's gotten him, you know? And but I don't think he's consciously like deciding that. I think he's just like acting.
No, this is 100% really fucked subconscious. Up.
Yeah. And I mean, that's why it's called We the Animals. They're all operating from this
instinct.
Id, you know? This like hyper fucking.
Right. What I mean, I think that's what it, like I said, the him attacking his mom, I think that's what it all represented. I don't think he was like that thought in his head, like, oh, okay. I'm gonna beat my mom and that'll make me like my dad and that'll make me more of a man. Like, I think it was just like instinct, because when I was going through my own rejecting of my parents and my own anger when I was a teen, that was my instinct, was to attack them. Like, obviously never physically or anything like that, but mentally and maybe sometimes verbally, I was just like in attack mode all the time. And I didn't realize until I was a lot older that it was my defense mechanism and that it was misled.
Yeah. And that's another really, you know, and when we look at this movie and we talk about this movie, it's a lot to do with, we want to maybe blame the father for everything and we want to blame the mother for being so fucking, I don't know, who doesn't feed their kids, you know? But at the same time, I wanted to be mad at all of the characters, but what ended up happening is that, you know, you have to kind of step outside of yourself and look at the way, like, the movie is just kind of like him dealing with his trauma, and this is how he survived his own trauma. Like, everyone can have an opinion about how things should have been and how we, you know, we can't forgive the father, we can't forgive the mother, and I'm not forgiving the kids, you know, but you have to kind of step outside of it and go, you know, wow, like, this is what the movie was doing, was presenting you a very human story of just people being human. And sometimes that's really jarring to watch because it's reality, you know, it's not shying away from it, you know, it's showing you that these are real humans and this is how they live and this is how they survive, you know, they're just making it. And I think that's why the entire movie theater was just speechless and just sat there after the movie, because if we didn't experience this, we know someone who did, you know. And it's, we understand that it's gray, we understand that it's like neither here nor there, and it's this gray feeling at the end. And I don't know, did you feel that way? I know that we had different perspectives on the entire movie, so I want to hear yours.
As far as judging them and them being forgivable or unforgivable, I totally agree with your point. Yeah, I think I wasn't like super confused. I get like a lot of parts were definitely confusing, because I went with a friend who was like, well, what the hell was all this about? And I was just like, it was about this internal shit, you know what I mean? It was a very internal movie. And I think you've had like 12 hours to process it. I've had, you know, like a week to process it, and that makes a lot of a difference too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's a movie that everybody should watch, especially as queer people or people who grew up poor with a parent or two parents that had depression and who grew up around machismo. Like, there's going to be something in it for you to reflect upon no matter what. It did make it a lot more innocent than in the book. The book is a lot harder to read, but it is still very traumatic. So also trigger warning, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to watch this movie, like, especially if you've been through a lot of shit. So just careful.
Yeah, I know some
first.
People that, like, I told about the movie and I was like, and they straight up told me that's too much like my own childhood. And I was like, yeah, you're right, don't watch it. Like,
mm-hmm. I mean, like, some people can handle that shit. Like, I can handle a lot. Like, I could straight up see like the most traumatic thing in my life in a movie, and I can just watch it. But not everybody has that capability.
Yeah, everyone's at a different level of dealing with their shit. And, you know, I talked to someone who I loved and they were like, I'm not going to watch that. Like, I told them, similar to Moonlight, I told them kind of a synopsis and they were like, that's too much like my life, I'm okay. You know, mm-hmm. And I understand, this movie's not, I mean, if you, especially, you can't tell someone how to deal with their trauma. So, you know, if you can't watch it, you can't watch it, that's fine. But it is trigger warning if you have like very, you know, abuse, rape, child stuff that's not cool. I mean, the book is just so much more heavy.
The book is like a lot heavier. It's a quick read though, if you're cool with reading.
I mean, it's beautifully written. it's beautifully written. There's stuff in there that was just like, it's beautiful, beautiful. I don't know if I can read the whole way through anymore, though. Like, if I wanted to reread it, I'd probably omit the last part of it, you know, when he's older and he grows up. I'll probably just completely leave that out, because I can't deal with him going to the psych ward. And then him, when he did his TED talk, he talked about how that was real, like that happened to him. And so to know that really happened to him, it just, like, I'm still trying to process my feelings about it and separate my feelings and just look at him, because we always ask for stories to be told from their, like, the person who knows this life. And this is first person narrative, and this is based on his life. And how much more real can we want something to be? And how much more representative do we want something to be? Like, this is it. Like, he's writing it, and they got his approval throughout this entire movie. And this is what we ask for queer Latinx people to tell their own stories, and he's telling his, and it's not us to judge whether that's right or wrong, but just to see it for what it is beautiful and art. And I'm still speechless about it, though.
I guess we'll probably just wrap up. I mean, we've already given our readings. This movie, no matter how happy or sad it makes you, like, it's just incredible. It's just incredible.
Yeah, so, 5 panuzas, guys. Like,
check that out immediately. This is a heavy episode.
Yeah, it's a heavy topic, you know. So thanks, guys.
Yeah. We'll wrap it up. So I hope you guys liked our synopsis of this. If you made it all the way through this, I can only imagine that it's pretty likely you've read the book or watched the movie already, because it's so spoiler heavy, like we warned earlier. If you came back to it, then hi again. I'm definitely open to talking about this movie a little more and your thoughts. You can find me at MYTEPanda on Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah, you can find me at FriedPapita on Twitter and Cabrona on Instagram, and then you can follow us
at CYC Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, and facebook.com/CYC Podcast. You can listen to additional content on patreon.com/CYC Podcast. Actually, no, sorry, the CYC Pod at Facebook, because somebody else took it. Jerks. A very free and great thing that you can do for us, if you like us at all, this helps us just extraordinarily, like, so much. But go and rate and review us on iTunes and Stitcher and Facebook. The first one more than anything, because that helps more people find us and we get to grow more and maybe travel one day to a city near you.
Yes. Coming attraction. Love it. But yeah, again, thanks to everybody. We love y'all. Y'all are the shit. Wow, if you listen to all this. Wow.
All right, my laptop is gonna die. Bye.